Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. I would like to point out that this show is being pre-recorded live on Tuesday, August the 22nd, 2017, for later broadcast on Monday, August the 28th. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening to everybody out there. I'm on my way back from the regional office in St. Pete. Later in the show, I can tell everybody about that. But we want to welcome our listeners this evening. We'd like to thank the sponsors of tonight's show, the American Legion, Post 303, Bonita Springs. That's in Florida. Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel action. I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. Remember, this is your show, so call in and give us your views and comments. Now back to David.
Thanks, Richard. One topic I'd like to lead off with tonight is one that that we found affects some veterans. Especially those that served prior to 1973 may have heard of the infamous fire in July of that year, which destroyed millions of veterans' military records, which were stored in the National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis. Approximately 16 to 18 million official military personnel files were destroyed on July the 12th, 1973, when a fire devastated the Records Center. According to a July 2017 American Legion article, now more than 44 years after the fire, staff at the National Personnel Records Center are still attempting to piece together some of those records. Teams at the facilities are reconstructing about 2,000 to 3,000 records per week and using information that was not destroyed and then working with other agencies and the military branches to get additional information. About 6 million records have been reconstructed since the 1973 fire, but that leaves still about 10 to 12 million records either awaiting reconstruction or that may be beyond reconstruction. And we've represented quite a few veterans that served in the 60s and in the 50s and some from World War II era, whose records were destroyed in the fire. The National Personnel Records Center houses military records of individuals who served in the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard dating back as far as 1886 and as recently as 2008. No National Guard records are stored there unless guardsmen, a member of the Guard served on active duty or was federalized. Those who were never called up to active duty would likely be referred their respective states if they were looking for their National Guard records. Anyone seeking a veteran's records for the sake of receiving VA benefits should make sure that when they make the request that they state the reason, which is they're seeking VA benefits, because there is a fee of $25 per five pages to receive a record, but there's no fee if the request is to secure a veteran's benefit. So for more information about getting service records for a veteran, you can go to the website, grab your pen and paper. It's an easy one to remember, though. The website is archives.gov. Archives is archives.gov. Archives.gov. And then look for the tab on that page for veteran service records. You can also see the instructions on that page for ordering your records. Okay, back to you, Richard.
Yeah, David, and on that note, it's a very good topic because of a case we recently had. And so many veterans that I've talked to have told me that they were advised by personnel from the DAV or veteran service officers that they could not substantiate and get a favorable result on their disability claim because their record was destroyed in the fire. And I just want to let our veterans know that if anyone ever tells you that's inaccurate information. There's many ways to substantiate and get a favorable result for a disability claim. So don't let the fire back in 1973 dissuade you from moving forward to try to get your disability compensation. In other news, many of you may recall President Trump's promise to start a special White House phone number for veterans to call to report problems they are having with the VA and to seek some help in resolving those problems. Back in early June, a toll-free number was finally provided to the public. That number is 1-855-948-2311. It is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Again, that number is 1-855-948-2311. Well, the latest development about that hotline is that on August the 11th, the VA issued a press release saying that the two-month pilot phase of the new White House hotline that began in June has demonstrated that veterans calling the hotline respond best when their calls are answered by fellow veterans and others with firsthand experiences on their issue. As a result, VA announced that it will target highly qualified veterans to staff the hotline going forward instead of contracting the service to a third-party vendor and is hiring additional VA personnel to complete the planned move to a 24 operation. This message, we've heard loud and clear, is veterans want to talk to other veterans, help them solve problems, and get VA services, said Secretary David Shulkin. We're taking steps to answer that call. This is a great idea. This decision will delay the full-time stand-up of the 24-hour service by 2 months to no later than October 15th in order to ensure the hiring and training processes are complete. Until that time, the hotline's pilot program service is available to receive calls from veterans from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Again, the VA hotline is 1-855-948-2311. That's 1-855-948-2311. Back to you, David.
Yes, and I was just speaking with a veteran this past week who had been experiencing a long delay in getting a medical appointment at the VA clinic in her town, and she called that number, and within a couple days she got a call from the clinic in response and schedule her for appointment. So it can be very helpful. So call that number, and hopefully within a few months it will be a 24-hour service instead of just 8 to 5 Eastern time, Monday through Friday. I have other news of interest for veterans, and I'd like to talk tonight specifically about the Board of Veterans Appeals. The Board of Veterans Appeals, as many veterans call it, the BVA, and you may wonder, those of you that may not have dealt with it, what is the BVA? It's an appeals organization, as the name suggests. It's part of the VA, and it's based in Washington, D.C., just a few blocks north of the White House, and many veterans who have been denied disability claims end up appealing their cases to the Board of Veterans Appeals. And then sometimes even further beyond that board, outside of the VA, to the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which is not part of the VA. So what is the BVA? It's part of the Department of Veterans Affairs. As I say, it's located in Washington, D.C. Its mission is to conduct hearings and decide appeals that are within the board's jurisdiction, and they're supposed to do it according to the law in a timely manner. But the reality, as veterans and their advocates know, they can often wait 4, 5, or even more years for a BVA decision, starting from the time they filed a notice of disagreement to a regional office decision. So let's say a veteran has filed a claim for disability compensation at his or her regional office and may get a decision in 6 months, a year, maybe longer. They file a notice of disagreement. The regional office then might take 2, 3, or 4 years to make a decision on that notice of disagreement, issuing a statement of the case. And then from there, the veteran will file a VA Form 9 appeal to the Board of Veterans Appeals and then take another 4 or 5 years or 6 years or longer to get a decision for the Board of Veterans Appeals. So it's a broken system. We've talked on previous shows about legislation which is supposed to fix that this year, but we're really skeptical of that. But basically, the board consists of a chairman, a vice chairman, and then other members who are known as the veterans law judges, who are supported by a very large staff of attorneys and administrative personnel. Each year, the board releases a detailed written report of its work. The most recently available report is for fiscal year 2015. And keep in mind, we're within, about 6 weeks of the end of fiscal year 2017. So there is a bit of a delay, perhaps not surprising with the BVA. But during that year, fiscal year 2015, the board at that time had 10 chief judges and then 53 other veteran law judges. We know, Richard and I know, that from talking with judges that earlier this year, that number was increased. I'm not sure the exact number now, but it's slightly more now. Now, those 10 chief judges and 53 plus other judges are assisted by a staff of approximately, get this, about 450 staff lawyers who will review the files and prepare tentative written decisions for review and signature by one of the veteran law judges. In fiscal year 2015, the board issued 55,713 decisions for veterans and their families, which is the highest number of decisions issued by the board since the 1988 enactment of the Veterans Judicial Review Act. And it was in 1988 that law also established, it created, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, or the CAVC, as we call it. Additionally, the board held 12,738 hearings, and about 94%, just under 94% of the decisions that year, or approximately 52,304, dealt specifically with disability compensation benefits as opposed to other issues. And of those 52,304 decisions, here are some interesting statistics for veterans and their advocates. Over 16,000 cases, 16,633, or approximately 38.1%, the appeals were granted, meaning that the veteran won his or her claim outright at the BVA level on appeal. In another 24,619 cases, or 47%, the board remanded, which means sent back to the regional office, the cases for more work or for some sort of corrective action. In other words, the appeal wasn't denied, it was still alive, and the board essentially said that more work had to be done by the regional office or some sort of corrective action taken. So that's another 47% of the cases. It was only in just over 9,000 cases, or about 17.78% of the ones decided, were the appeals denied outright. And you might say, what do all these statistics mean? Well, here's the good news for veterans. It means that in nearly 79%, almost 80% of the BVA decisions in fiscal year 2015 resulted in either an outright win for the veteran or at least a remand of the case for further development of the regional office, meaning that the regional office erred in nearly 79% of those 52,304 decisions which had been appealed. Now, to be fair, we got to put this in context. Want to be fair here, and keep in mind that only about 10% of regional office decisions get appealed. So of those 10% or so in that fiscal year, just short of 80% of those were found to have errors of them. All right, and that's a lot. 79% of those decisions by the BVA that year resulted in either the regional office decision being overturned outright or the case being sent back for more developments. Now, the bad news, as I mentioned earlier, and Richard, I'd like to hear your insight on this as well, is that it can take many, many years after filing a notice of disagreement to even get to the BVA, and then we sit around waiting, and then even longer, because if the board remands a case back to the regional office, sends it back to the regional office, it might be another 1 or 2 or 3 years before the regional office makes another decision. What are your impressions, Richard? I know you've got a lot of thoughts on this issue.
Well, you know, David, you and I talk all the time about how can the VA improve, and essentially the backlog of the cases. And, you know, there's no magical formula. You can't wave a wand over the VA or the BVA. Simply put, more personnel, and I know we've got 450 staffers, which seems like a lot, but we need more judges. And, you know, I know in February, judges were going to, I think, a total of about 90 as a result of the new ones coming on board as a result of the Obama administration. But there's no new ones since then. But I also know, David, when I had a BVA hearing the other day in St. Pete, and I was told by the staffer down there who assigned the veterans to various rooms, that starting in September, they're going to have, when they have their BVA days, their hearing days, they're going to start having two judges instead of one judge. So there's a little sign of improvement. But again, you know, until we start really putting, you know, more judges in seats there and working these hearings on a more regular basis, that 4 to 5 year delay is going to be tough to fix. Now, David, I know there are cases where they will expedite the case, and we've talked about this before. And depending on the veteran's age, health situation, whether or not he's going to be homeless, if there's a financial hardship involved. Those are factors that the BVA will consider to expediting. For instance, the case I just had, my veteran is 89 years old. He's a World War II veteran, been fighting 50 years. So that case was expedited. But even in that situation, David, the judge made the following statement. He recognized that the case is on the expedited, the advanced calendar list, but that they're still going to have to wait for the transcript to come back, make sure they have all the evidence, and then that's been secure. The case will then be brought back to the same judge, who will then make the decision. When I asked the judge, well, what do you think? He kind of paused, hesitated, and he was hoping for a 6 to 9 month decision for this particular veteran. And that's an expedited case for an 89-year-old man. So it's still a problem, David. I don't know how to fix it. I don't have a wand.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd give another example of a veteran, a case that we've represented. We had and he is 85 years old. So the Board of Veteran Appeals will say that one of several reasons for the board to put a case to to advance it on the docket, which means to move it ahead of other veterans instead of taking it in the usual order that they've received it, is veteran being 75 years of age or older, or very serious, essentially terminally ill and close to death, that type of serious health condition, or really severe financial conditions. And but in this particular case, veteran 85 years old, got the case advanced on the docket. They held a hearing in July of 2016. And so we're talking about now, it was early July, so it's been more than 13 months, and we're still waiting for the decision. For those that may be listening that haven't dealt with the Board of Veterans' Appeals, you might be thinking, well, if I get a hearing, won't the judge make a decision that day? And as Richard was saying, no, it's often months. Well, in this particular case, and this is a case, another case on their so-called advanced docket, 13 months after the hearing, we are still waiting for the decision. And so when veterans say with the VA, it's like the VA's motto is, delay, deny, and then wait for them to die. It's not far-fetched to, for the veterans to reach that conclusion when you see cases like this. And it's not an isolated case. In recent years, they've documented, I think the number was over 30,000 veterans that have died while their appeals were pending. Now, when we mentioned the statistic from fiscal year 2015 report saying that they had 450 staff attorneys, that doesn't count other additional staff personnel. That's just the staff attorneys. And my thought would be what they ought to do is take the top 10, 20, 30% of the most experienced staff attorneys, give them whatever additional expedited training they need, and move them up to be at least temporary veteran law judges. I don't think that's far-fetched. I don't think you'd probably see much difference in the quality of decisions from what you're seeing right now. But that would be a way that the VA needs to show some real sense of urgency and not allow something like, well, it's going to take so many months to get the transcript. Well, then they need to contract with more transcribers transcribe the tapes of these hearings. This is not rocket science. What it does show is extremely poor management, no sense of urgency, and that reflects what we can only conclude is a really lackadaisical attitude that they have. They really don't care, because if they did, they would have fixed it. And they have all sorts of excuses, but they're not fixing the problem. And this has been going on for many years. It'll be interesting to see how the at least predicted changes to the appeal system that was passed by Congress and expected to be signed any time by President Trump will be affecting these processing times, as well as the statistics on either favorable or unfavorable outcomes for the veterans. This new legislation we've talked about on previous shows basically creates three options for veterans who are dissatisfied with the initial decisions on their claims made by the regional office. And I'll just go over these three options so that listeners can get a sense of what this new legislation is going to do. And then, Richard, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts further on this. But the first option for these veterans would be, if their claim is denied, they can seek a higher-level review by someone in the regional office on the same evidence that was presented on the original claims. In other words, they can't submit new evidence, they can't have a hearing. In other words, it's just a paper case based on the same evidence. And you might think, well, what's the purpose of that? Under the present law, before this present legislation, there's already been a higher level review option. It's called review by a decision review officer who is a more experienced, more senior person in the regional office. And under the present law, before these changes, the veteran could ask for a hearing, and they can submit new evidence, and the duty to assist on the part of the VA still exists. And all that's going to be taken away with this higher-level review, which could be by anyone in the regional office that they designate. It doesn't have to be someone with more expertise like a decision review officer. So my prediction is, there's a very high likelihood of the same bad decision being simply rubber-stamped again, because the new legislation removes the VA's current legal duty to assist after initial decision, and then some low-level VA employee will be the ones making decisions. Before we get to the second option, Richard, what are your thoughts on this first, this so-called higher-level review at the regional office?
Well, I kind of chuckled when you said, what's the benefit to this. But I wanted to say one thing. I wanted to start to digress a little bit, but I was thinking about what we were just talking about with the advanced docket for our older veterans. We talked about, you talked about a veteran who's 85, and I just had one who's 89. And, you know, if there are any veterans out there listening to our show tonight who are in that age range, or there are family members with veterans who are in that age range, I don't want you to say, well, why even appeal? I'm 85, 86. If they're not going to decide my case for 4 or 5 years, I might be dead. And there's a likelihood that you could be deceased by the time they reach a decision. However, if you have a spouse, your spouse can then step in your shoes and take over your claim so that your spouse would then benefit by the decision from the BVA. And David, you and I actually had cases where we posthumously gone back in and fixed the death certificate, got veteran service connected, and the widow then received a nice check for somewhere around $135,000. So I just want to throw that out there to our veterans who may be in that situation. Please don't say, I'm not going to appeal, because it just won't matter. It can matter, right, because it can matter to some of your families.
That's a great point. That's an excellent point, because, as you say, the veteran's surviving spouse may be able to receive a significant amount of money, depending on the facts of the particular case. But they need to keep, the veteran needs to keep appealing and get good legal advice about the case. Now, let me go to the second option under this legislation, which both houses of Congress have signed, and it should be signed by both houses of Congress have passed it overwhelmingly, and now it's been sent to the president. So I predict he's going to sign it soon. But the second option that a veteran will have under this legislation will be they can file a supplemental claim with the regional office that would include the opportunity to submit additional evidence. Now, compare that to the first option I mentioned a few minutes ago, where they could submit a request for a higher level review by someone at the same regional office, but simply based on the same evidence. They can't get a hearing. They can't submit new evidence. My prediction was you're likely going to get a rubber stamping of the same denial you had the first time. But with the second option, they could file a supplemental claim. But to me, it raises a question. How far is the VA going to go, if at all, to make it clear what additional evidence is going to be sufficient for the veteran to win with a supplemental claim? I think there's a really good chance that this supplemental claim system will be more time wasted for the veteran trying to anticipate, trying to guess what will be enough to satisfy the VA. It's what some veterans call kind of the hamster wheel environment, which they have with the current system. But that will be another option. They can file a supplemental claim. And then the third option under the proposed, what will be the new legislation, is they can appeal directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. In other words, they get to skip a step, which is good. They get to skip a step which currently exists, because now to appeal to the Board of Veterans' Appeals, you first have to file a notice of disagreement, and the regional office gets another cut at it. Well, this new legislation will cut that step out if the veteran elects to appeal directly to the Board of Veterans' Appeals. And at that point, the veteran will have basically a choice of one of two different tracks to take with the BVA. One track will be they can ask for a hearing and or the opportunity to submit additional evidence. That's one track. The other track is they can waive a hearing, waive the opportunity to submit additional evidence, but ask the BVA to make a decision based on what's already in the record. Well, that other track is supposedly going to be a track that the VA will process faster. How much faster? We have no idea. And I don't think anyone has any idea until this new system is put in place. And under the legislation, it appears that the VA is going to have about a year and a half to even start implementing this new system. So there's a lot of unknowns here. People are just going to have to wait and see. And they're really putting a lot of faith, I think unwarranted faith, in the VA. But here's the overriding problem. So you get three different choices now for veterans who will qualify under this new system. And what does this legislation not do? It does nothing to fix the current backlog that exists right now between 450 and 500,000 cases which are currently on appeal. The legislation does nothing to boost significantly the number of VA employees handling claims and appeals right now. And I'll tell you what's even more frustrating, Richard, I just found out a couple days ago that one of the cases we've been waiting patiently on, it was a decision review officer level appeal. We had a hearing at the regional office in St. Petersburg, Florida in July of 2016. In fact, it was the same week as the other case I was telling you about, which is the Board of Veterans Appeals case. It was in July of 2016. So now, more than 13 months later, we're still patiently waiting for the decision review officer to make a decision. All right, they've had plenty of time to transcribe the record. They've got that. So I exchanged emails with this decision review officer earlier this week saying, you know, we've been waiting patiently. Can you give us some idea how much longer it's going to be? And the decision review officer replied by saying, well, it's getting close to the end of the fiscal year, which ends the end of September. And at that regional office, St. Petersburg, Florida regional office, some of the decision review officers have been reassigned temporarily to help the rest of the staff, catch up on initial claims that aren't even on appeal yet. Well, to me, that's really bizarre because it ought to be the other way around. The decision review officer group at that regional office is relatively small, probably in the order of less than three dozen droves. And now we're finding out that some of those are being pulled and reassigned to handle claims, initial claims. It's nothing against initial claims. Those veterans deserve, you know, timely processing. But again, here's a case where we had to wait several years just to get the hearing. And now, more than a year after the hearing, we are still waiting for a decision. And now we know it's still going to be at least a few more months at the soonest. So it's a broken system. It clearly needs to be reformed. This legislation, which I expect President Trump is going to sign very soon, in my prediction, will just replace one flawed system with another flawed system. I hate sounding pessimistic, but that's really how I see it. And so veterans, our listeners out there may be thinking, well, what do we do about it? Well, you're going to have to continue to be persistent, patient, but use that time and prepare your cases as strongly as you can with evidence and get good assistance either from a veteran service officer or a lawyer so that you've prepared and presented the strongest evidence possible. It'll minimize your chances of having to go on appeal. So I want to remind everyone that, again, here's our call-in number if you want to share your thoughts, your experiences, or if you have questions for us. If you want to grab a pen and paper here, call us here at the Veterans News Hour tonight. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. For those of you that are listening as we're broadcasting this live on Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017, you may be wondering, how is it that you're hearing us here on a Tuesday night? We're usually live on Monday evenings on Station 1. Well, we're here because there's a need to pre-record our show tonight, and this show will be recorded for later broadcast this next Monday, August 28th, 2017. But if you're listening tonight, August the 27th, you're listening to the live show, and you can call in. Again, 888-627-6008. Richard, I understand you have some more news. You got a report on an issue of the VA healthcare enrollment program.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. I want to just piggyback again, based upon what you, the information that you provided our listeners. You know, if I was a veteran and I was listening to this, I might get a little pessimistic, and especially, you know, going down to these the Legion and some of these other places where there's, it's very pessimistic about claim processing and appealing. And my advice to all veterans is, no matter what the decision is, if you have another appeal avenue for yourself, take it. Don't let the last decision be the final decision for your claim. Because, you know, David, you and I have been practicing law, you know, combined about 70 years. And I would never say that my opinion should be the final opinion for my veteran. You know, during the appeal process, we're given an opportunity to get, you know, gather new evidence, connect the dots, as you like to always say, David. And when we've done that, we've been very successful. So, yes, it looks bleak at times, and we know that motto, delay, delay, die, but do yourself a favor and stay in the boat and see it through. So I guess I'll get off on the whole appeal thing, but it really is important that our veterans, no matter what hurdle the current legislation and the proposed legislation might be, we need to continue fighting. In other news of interest to veterans, a recent article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution newspaper revealed that the VA healthcare system's enrollment program is still plagued by serious problems. According to reporter Brad Schrade, August 10, 2017 article, a federal review earlier this year finds the health enrollment system overseen by a national VA office in Atlanta is in disarray. Poor oversight and mismanagement of the enrollment system resulted in delays to health care access for some veterans and likely denied access to others, according to a draft report that the VA's Office of Inspector General wrote in May of this year. The Inspector General's report highlights the depth of the problem in the VA's enrollment process that is overseen by the Veterans Health Administration and its National Health Eligibility Center in Atlanta. VHA does not have reasonable assurances that veterans receive consistent or timely enrollment decisions at VA medical facilities nationwide, the report said. David, do you have anything more on that?
Yes, that Atlanta Journal-Constitution investigation was conducted in April of this year, 2017, showed that there was a plan to fix the enrollment backlog, which involved hundreds of thousands of healthcare applications that had been botched or undermined by the executives who were supposed to fix the problem. And according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution investigation, Veteran Health Administration officials, they failed in their oversight of the system. They did not provide training, proper training to those who were making enrollment and eligibility decisions for veterans at the local hospital. According to the VAIG report, which was released in May, only about 35% of the more than 100 facilities examined by auditors had required policies and procedures for making health care enrollment decisions. That's only about a third of 100 facilities had those policies and procedures to how to make those decisions. So when a veteran applies for health care, the VA officials are supposed to enter the information that the veteran provides in the enrollment computer systems, and that can help verify the veteran's eligibility, but some hospitals failed to follow that process at all, and that, of course, led to enrollment delays, according to the VAIG. Now, the report did not explicitly say that eligible veterans were denied enrollment and access, but the enrollment process was so inconsistent that it was implied by the report that veterans had been denied access. Some hospitals kept no record in computer systems of a veteran's attempt to apply, and there was no follow-up if the veteran needed additional proof of eligibility. And the IG report also said that by not entering the applicant's information in the system, the enrollment staff delayed or in some cases inadvertently prevented the veteran from obtaining the evidence needed to validate the applicant's eligibility for VA care. So basically, these veterans were left in an uncertain status. And some hospitals kept no record at all of the veteran's attempt to apply. And the individual was essentially turned away if the application was incomplete. And, Richard, you and I know from anecdotally from many veterans that we've talked to that, you know, some veterans, they're so frustrated with the system and they've heard so much negativity about the VA that when they run into something like this, they just give up and they move on. Richard, I understand that the current VA Secretary, Dr. David Shulkin, you know, he actually oversaw the VHA before he moved up to be the top top person of the VA. What was his response?
Well, he promised to fix the problem with the Atlanta National Enrollment Center when he accepted the Inspector General's report in September of 2015 that identified the problems at the office and within the VA's enrollment system. He assured that VHA regards the issues raised with the utmost seriousness, and we are taking action to address the concern, he wrote in response to the 2015 report. Part of that fix was to carry out a plan to enroll as many as possible who were stuck in the pending application backlog. Many of the 800,000 on the list had been in the backlog for years. About 300,000 had died while on the list. Some on the list may not have been actual applications, and for those who were trying to apply, it was unclear how many were still seeking VA health care enrollment. But the VA was tasked to make efforts to contact all the living veterans on the list. If the agency couldn't reach them or the veterans failed to respond within a year, the VA could remove their names from the backlog. So, because of problems and questions surrounding that process, some members of Congress and asked Secretary Shulkin in March of 2017 to take additional steps to ensure eligible veterans were enrolled before purging the backlog list. Shulkin received additional pressure in early August of this year from a whistleblower in Atlanta to halt the process to delete the applications because of the ongoing problems in the enrollment system. VA whistleblower Scott Davis, who testified before Congress in 2014 and provided the draft audit to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, said the plan to purge the applications was moving forward. The audit shows that veterans in many cases are denied access to care not because of the incomplete applications, but because of actions taken by VA staff or not properly trained, Davis said. On August 9th, the spokesman for Secretary Shulkin said the VA will not close out the application until the issues are resolved. However, given its history, can veterans trust the VA to solve that problem? What do you think? Call us and share your news. Remember, you can call our show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. It's amazing, David.
Yeah,
what else we got going on?
Well, that's a very important story that merits further coverage in the future. You know, we hear lots of stories in our work from veterans, and honestly, many of them are very pleased with the VA health care that they've received. It partly depends on what facility they're in, and it depends on their particular situation. We've heard many veterans praise the VA healthcare system as being just outstanding. And, you know, we've witnessed it ourselves. There have been times when I've gone into the VA facilities, the healthcare facilities in St. Petersburg and Tampa, to visit veterans who are in the hospital. And the facilities look fantastic. I mean, they're very professional and, you know, outstanding in many respects, but that's not true for all veterans. And the story that you just talked about, Richard, as reported by the Atlanta newspaper, really reveals that there are still some very serious problems. And it starts with veterans who have simply taken the first step and tried to enroll in the VA healthcare system, that there have been a lot of problems. And to find out that there was a list of about 800,000 veterans of applications or possible applications which were pending, 800,000, wow. And they estimated that about 300,000 of those veterans had died while still being on the list. So that's just totally unacceptable. But, again, that's a story that we need to cover more in the future, and we think it's important to let veterans know there. As another recent story since the beginning of the year has been the efforts by Secretary Shulkin and Congress to try to keep alive the Veterans Choice Program, because it's an alternative that allows some veterans to get their health care in the private sector. And, you know, there's been more funding of that program, but it appears Secretary Shulkin really wants to modify that program even further. How much so, we don't know. There are some concerns by some veteran groups that really might go into the way of so-called privatizing veterans' health care, which a lot of veterans, I think, rightly have concerns about, because the VA, for all of its flaws, does have a tremendous amount of expertise in dealing with many uniquely veteran issues, and has the benefit of long history, long organizational memory in many respects that you're just not going to get in the private sector. And again, many veteran VA facilities provide just outstanding care. I realize there are some you can read in the newspaper or do an internet search and read about particular VA hospitals like the one in Washington, D.C. or the one up in New Hampshire that have had very serious problems with whistleblowers that have been doctors and nurses in the facilities reporting all sorts of serious issues. But in any event,
we had that one, the one story about the one in Baltimore. Wasn't that the surgical tools they found were not sterilized? And
yeah, unfortunately, that's not been a terribly unique situation either. There have been many VA medical facilities stretching back decades, over a number of decades, where it turned out that medical equipment was not properly sterilized, and therefore veterans were being notified that they had to be tested for possible exposure to hepatitis, HIV. I mean, it's just some serious stuff. But in any event, we'll keep tracking that issue. Richard, I think we're drawing towards closure for tonight's show, so why don't you tell our listeners about a very important VA program we've highlighted in other shows, called Coaching into Care.
Thank you, David. Yes, if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. help your veteran. Along that same note, I would like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Yes, thanks, Richard. I think that's an excellent program. We've talked about that on many of our prior shows, and we've also had guests on some of our prior shows talking about the horrible effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. In one of our earlier shows, we had Rebecca Winkler, whose son died from suicide caused by prolonged and very serious post-traumatic stress disorder, and she leads the Winkler's Wish Foundation now to help families and veterans. There are a lot of organizations out there besides the VA. There's Vets for Warriors. We had a guest from that organization on not long ago. And for all our listeners, you can go back and look on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. And you can listen to our archived podcasts of prior shows to listen to the insights of some of these guests. And, you know, for a good part of June, we emphasized post-traumatic stress disorder because that was PTSD Awareness Month. But we can't forget, just because it's now August or any other month of the year, PTSD haunts veterans and affects their family members, and even affects communities 24/7, 12 months of the year. So take to heart the Coaching into Care program that Richard described, as well as the Veterans Crisis Line. They're very, very important. Well, it's about time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to our show here on BBS Radio. Again, as I mentioned a couple times during the show, we're recording this live on Tuesday, August 22nd. Some of you will be listening to this on Monday, August 28th, and it will be a recorded show at that point. But we hope you'll enjoy it. We'd like to thank, once again, our sponsors for tonight's show, American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group. I would like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show website. Again, that's bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Please listen in every Monday night, our regular time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time and 6 p.m. Pacific Time. That's our regular time on Station 1 of BBS. Until then, please have a great week. Good night. Good night, Richard.
Good night, David.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.